it's critical to recognize and understand this theory to be able to address social issues like discrimination, prejudice, even nationalism. Social identity theory explains the complex interplay between individual identities and group memberships and how this in-group versus out-group relationship influences our behavior, our perceptions, our social dynamics. And remember, social theory says that just belonging to a group, any group, no matter how minuscule, will set this in motion. Welcome to Social Threads Podcast, where we attempt to weave society together through conversation in order to foster connections. Hello, everyone. I'm Frances Lafferty, and I am here with Christina Barca.
Hey, everyone.
And this is our first show.
It's a long time coming.
We'll give a brief introduction and talk about why we've decided to start this podcast before we get into today's topic, which is social identities. If you enjoy this podcast and want to join us each week, please subscribe to our channel on YouTube or follow us wherever you get your podcast. Here, Christina and I will chat about all the crazy shit going on in culture, politics, life in general, and all the anxiety that may come along with it. Things are getting a little spicy out there, and it can be overwhelming. It's easy to get caught up in social media and news. How are we even supposed to deal with this shit? How do we deal with it without losing ourselves, losing our rights, losing our humor? And how do we deal with it while also enjoying our lives, our families, and our friendships? So after a few days, or for me, a few weeks of spurning after the election,
I'll let you know when I'm done.
Yeah, Christina and I started to ask ourselves, how did we get here and what can we do now? And we don't just mean, how did we elect Trump as president again? It goes well beyond electing someone that a lot of folks see as a disruptor in a system that doesn't work for its people. This podcast is not only an attempt to help understand how this came to be and learn how we can interact with each other in a better way, because what we're currently doing, that shit's definitely not working.
No, I'd say not.
But we also want to share things that we can do to be more actionable. We can be the disruptors that we need, and we'd also ensure that we would work for us. We imagine that this will be a long process and may take us in all kinds of directions, but that's part of the fun, right?
Well, if it's me and you, it'll be in all different directions. For sure.
So that is what and why we started this podcast. We also want you to get involved. Feel free to send us your ideas, your observations, your criticisms, whatever it is you want to share. We want to hear it. Each week, we'll cover a different topic. One week, we may focus on social issues or behaviors and ethics. And another week, we might dive into policy and systemic issues. Or we might do something more general where we talk about family and relationships. But whatever it is, it'll be good. So join us each week. Dude, honestly, I don't even think I'd be able to fill my top 8 friends list on MySpace at this point in my life right now.
So, I haven't thought about that in so many years.
Seriously. So I hope, since I have no friends to coerce into listening to this, I hope you know people.
No, I don't.
I know you.
It's going to be 2 people recording a podcast and then 2 people listening to a podcast.
Well, the only difference is we have these mics in our face.
Right? This is what we do anyway. It's so funny because I never really thought about it when I was younger, when I was growing up. But as you become an adult, you really have to be selective with the people that you allow take up space and time in your life.
Girl, preach. I completely agree. I'll just speak for myself. When I was younger, everything was about quantity, like my top 8, having a group in high school. And then as I get older, life just gets real. It's that time that you're spending with the people you call friends, it becomes so much more precious and so much more crucial. For example, I have 3 friends, and those are the ones that pull me through life.
Exactly. The value, what you get out of friendships, is totally different as a child than as an adult. I can see why we dwindle the big pool down into the ones really special that help get us through life. You and I have known each other for over 20 years now.
Oh, did we have to give them the math?
Yes.
Okay.
We did meet working together at Best Buy in West Palm Beach, though. So shout out 550.
Hey, you didn't.
Had to do it. Had to do it. Come on.
Stop.
I'd say when you and I met, on paper, we probably looked quite different. From lifestyle to political leanings, we were pretty different.
Certainly political leanings.
Certainly that.
Certainly that. Backgrounds a little bit different.
I think we align a lot more.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hey, personal growth is a good thing.
Honestly, your capacity to hear facts and maybe change your opinion as a result, that is a unique feature.
It is a dwindling thing nowadays, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
All right, so let's start the actual show, shall we? Into today's topic, which is social identities, and it would probably help to define social identities, the categories, which can be gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, age, class. It's endless. These categories can be self-claimed or prescribed by others. They can be obvious or not so obvious. In this end, they can influence a person's values, motivations, and the stories they tell themselves. These identity categories can be super powerful because they can lead to bias, stereotypes, prejudice, and favoritism. Christina, are you familiar with social identity theory?
No, I know what social identities are, but what's the theory?
All right. I'm going to let everyone in on it. I'm going to totally geek out, right?
I was about to say, she's about to geek out.
Okay, so social identity theory was developed by Henry Tajfel and John Turner in the 1970s. It's a psychological framework for understanding how individuals identify themselves and behave within social groups. Henry Tajfel joined the French army during World War II and became a prisoner of war, which he survived, but only to find out that his entire family was not so lucky. They had all been killed by Nazis, and that set in motion his desire to find out what could possibly motivate or drive people to such hatred of others. Social identity theory states that people have a fundamental need to belong and that they derive part of their self-concept and self-esteem from their group memberships. According to the theory, our identity consists of both personal and social components. Personal identity includes individual characteristics and experiences, while social identity are the groups we belong to. So like sexual orientation communities, nationality, religion, social clubs. These group memberships contribute to our self-image and how we perceive our place in society. However, we tend to develop in-group favoritism and out-group discrimination because we're people and we tend to favor the people in our groups and discriminate those not in our group. This is a concept called basking in reflected glory. This bias occurs even when the group is minuscule. Remember when we did that Friends bar crawl in Fort Lauderdale one year?
Well, the first half, yeah.
There were so many other groups there and we didn't interact with any of them. We just walked in and we're like, we got this.
Yep.
You don't have to know the people. You know nothing about them. You already make the assumption or have the perception that you're in the best group.
We are. I'm sorry. We had a group and it wasn't just us.
People are motivated to achieve a positive image. And we do that by comparing our groups favorably against the outgroups. We also have a tendency to shift depending on what's going on with our group. So when the opposite happens, when people perceive their group as inferior or that their group isn't doing so great, we will strive to improve the status, make the group perceived as better, or we may start to disassociate or leave the group altogether. For example, I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Feel free to send me your hate mail.
Ooh.
It's Francis@socialthreadspodcast.com. But anyway, I'm an Eagles fan, and when they're doing well, I tend to talk about them in a wee way. Like, our offense is one of the best in the league, or we were on fire.
What position do you play?
Exactly. And then the opposite happens. When they're not doing so great, then I may resort to a they way. So it's like dissociating in the smallest sense. I'm still an Eagles fan, but when they're not doing so great, I might be like, oh, the defense just wasn't there, or they made a lot of mistakes. All of a sudden, it's not a we because we're not doing so great.
Convenient.
We want to be part of a positive or high status group. So when they're not doing so well, we disassociate. This sense can also distort the way we see our groups in the first place. Like, I believe I'm a good person, therefore I'm in a good group. My group must be a good group. And that's how we get this us versus them. We believe we're in the good group, therefore everyone else not in my group must be in the bad group. There isn't only good and bad. That's how we tend to see
it. Yeah, simplify it.
It's critical to recognize and understand this theory to be able to address social issues like discrimination, prejudice, even nationalism. Social identity theory explains the complex interplay between individual identities and group memberships and how this in-group versus out-group relationship influences our behavior, our perceptions, our social dynamics, And remember, social theory says that just belonging to a group, any group, no matter how minuscule, will set this in motion.
That was scary.
Right? It can really mess you up.
And so in your research, was there anything that said anything about the brain chemistry part? Why are we predisposed to this binary understanding of in or out, right and wrong? Makes sense to perceive your group as the right group. Even the content that we're picking up is going to be based on who's around us. It makes sense that commonality is a thing. But like, I would like to know what natural propensity is to other. Why is it natural for us to exclude others in the interest of belonging to a group that has nothing to do with that? It's fascinating to me.
I totally see what you're saying. I'll actually give you a personal example of this, which honestly, I thought several times about even doing this because it's something that I am actually pretty ashamed of, especially when I was doing this research and realized what was happening in my brain and why I went along with this. But
just me and you here, don't worry about it.
Putting anyone else's personal opinion aside, I'm just giving this example to show how powerful this can be. As I said, and I'm an Eagles fan. I'm going to say it a billion times probably. So therefore, the team or other Eagles fans, those are my in-group. Anyone not an Eagles fan or not on the Eagles team, that's essentially my out-group in this scenario. I am also a huge advocate for dogs. You can probably see where this is going. I love all dogs. I've fostered many. I do whatever I can to help any. I don't know how many I've picked up off the street and brought them home just because I can't.
Like, I can confirm this.
So when my Eagles quarterback was found guilty of having a dog fighting ring, I believe that morally, I feel I should have personally condemned him immediately. But instead, I found myself falling for the rhetoric that others were saying is prevalent in his culture growing up. They're accustomed to it and don't realize it's wrong. He didn't have anyone to teach him growing up, so he didn't know it was wrong. All of the things. No, I started to do that just because he was in my in-group. And it doesn't even mean that I had to accept it or think that it was okay. But to have an explanation that makes it seem okay for my group, that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, we see that everywhere. I thought that stealing shellfish wasn't so bad when we almost lost Jameis Winston over it for Florida State
fans, boo.
Excuse me, we haven't corrected that particular thing just yet. She's a UF fan. Good Lord.
It's hard to say that nowadays. Now I would definitely be in my they.
Yeah, me too. They were great at some point.
Right? It was all just to say, for a moment in time, I misplaced my own morals, what I personally felt was wrong or right. And even if it's just me, maybe this isn't a deplorable offense to you, but it's just to say my personal beliefs and convictions. It's like I just threw them out for a moment because someone in my group looked bad. I had to like flip it on its head to be okay with my in-group.
This might be taking us into a rabbit hole, but you all have been warned. I guess my question is, would part of the solution be helping people understand that not everything is this binary right, wrong, in-group, out-group? I know that our brains are predisposed to doing that and simplifying that because then it makes life feel easier. And I get that. But if we start to think in like a yes and, yes, he had a dog fighting ring. That is against your morals. That is not something that you agree with. You are a dog lover. All true. Could it also be true that maybe it was part of culture? Maybe it was an education issue, whatever it is. I don't even know Michael Beck. I don't even know the story. I heard about it. I don't know the details of the story. Wouldn't at that point then almost give grace to your outgroup? I don't agree with the excuses you're making, but what if we thought in yes and terms?
Personally, I think it probably depends on the compassion you have for the other side. So in this scenario, if it had been the Cowboys quarterback that did this,
you're done.
Yeah, I will shove it down your throat how wrong he is.
Right.
You have to have a little bit of compassion to want to give grace to the other side. And that's a big thing.
Everything you're talking about now, I'm just like applying to things that matter more. Politics, family, all the things.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about how social identity plays into inclusion and diversity. Sometimes we'll think about like DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I don't know if it's because of the way the acronym is put together, people think of it that way. Okay, I need to do diversity, equity, and then inclusion. And I think if you are inclusive and treat people equally, then you get diversity.
I think it's incredibly complicated in all kinds of ways. I think the difference between equality and equity first, if you treat everybody the same, you're not necessarily taking into account the differences in how that person lives within the world. Maybe the goal isn't to treat everybody the same. Maybe the goal is to treat them as individuals based on who they are. And I think that is where how we get to equity, which then allows for inclusivity, which I think another word for that is belonging. So honoring who people are by knowing who they are, rather than just feeling like there might be a blanket set of guidelines on how to treat everybody. There's the general golden rule, do unto others as you want to be done to you. And absolutely, that's kindness. But if we're speaking diversity, equity, inclusion work, I think it's far more intentional than teaching people to be kind. People can choose to be kind at any given time. And I think we're seeing more and more that they're choosing not to be. So then what is the trick here? If you've had a decent childhood, I think most of us were taught you be kind to people, these things. I think the part that we really need to start to talk about is seeking to understand other people's experience and how that changes how they walk through the world versus how we walk through the world. I don't know if that's different from what you were saying, but I think part for me is for true equity and true inclusivity, you have to know who's there.
It's an excellent point because I think we even have a tendency to try to treat people equally, but doesn't allow the building of individuality either. Yeah. As a company, we want to be inclusive of X culture. All we're doing is taking that culture and putting it into a box and saying, those 2 billion people, they all fit this one mold. I totally see what you're saying.
I think the hard part, at least from a more macro or kind of political lens, when we try to create policy, we do have to kind of group people because the African-American community was affected in this way by our policies. So we're trying to group these people for maybe legislative reasons or political reasons or whatever it is. And I think that seeps into our psychosocial interactions, our interpersonal interactions with each other. I also think that our brain tries to make sense of things that we don't understand, and it fills gaps with what you do know, which is not actually about those people or that culture. So it's assumptions that are filling those gaps. I think that's where we get in trouble.
We're one of the most diverse countries in the world. Good to celebrate that, but it seems to bother people. It feels that by accepting others, they're being excluded. You used to have a saying like something, it's not pie.
Yeah, it's not pie. It's
equal rights for others.
It doesn't mean fewer rights for you. It's not a pie. That's funny. Oh, that's pretty good. And I think I had another one, didn't I? About when a group of people have had access to the whole pie, when you start to give pieces away, that feels like oppression, but they should have never had that much pie in the first place. You have too much pie. Giving rights to people is not a finite resource. But what is finite is good paying jobs and spaces for education, leadership positions, and the things that give you the American dream, what we're all hoping to do, more like the American myth, I think, for a lot of people. And if we just start to ignore the idea and we believe that our systems actually work for everyone because it works for me, that's a very individualistic perspective. If your lens is, no, this world is fine because it's fine for you, we're getting so lost in how to honor people's differences and how to have diversity and how to create belonging in our spaces. I just, the how is always what gets me.
We have to look at it and understand that there are people in this country that don't even get a seat at that table where the pie is being eaten. And I think we have to really do some soul searching even.
Yeah, you're right.
There are just so many people that have the idea, well, if you just work hard enough, you can sit at the table. And I'm sure we'll get into this in many episodes, but there's been so much systemic oppression throughout history where the opportunity you had to get to the table is much different. We have to look back at history. And one of the things I'm fearful is that we want to remove history. And it's because we don't want to face these things, or we don't want to be, oh yeah, there is a reason why these things are happening. Certain folks don't have the same opportunity. We don't really want you to know that. We want to brush over that and just be like, look, it's equal for everyone. We're all the same.
I would go a step further. I'm not sure that it's something they're trying to hide. It feels like they know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And when I say they, I'm talking about the people that own the pie. I'm not even talking about people who are participating in eating. There are very few people that own that pie. And they have convinced us, people eating the pie, that we need the structures that are in place that benefit those very few people. I mean, can we just call it what it is? In order for a few people to own the pie, majority of us to be sitting here eating the pie, different servings, and then have a group of people who aren't even at the table. That's a structure that's in place. That is what we are. It's how we were built. We can't have a pie for a few without exploiting the people who create the structures on their backs. We have a caste system in our country. It is based on our social identities. It's based on our income. It's based on fake science. And we all just live in the world with these truths. And I think we have a very individualistic understanding of looking at the world. So our lens is, well, the system isn't broken. I'm doing fine here. How do we start to think, well, what are your social identities? And how do those affect your lens? And how do those have you walking through the world differently from someone who has different social identities? How do we even take the next step then to get that person to care? The system works for them. How do you get a bunch of people to start to think about other people in order to fix something? And why? What's the motivation?
You and I have said so many times to each other, I only have so many fucks to give. You have to be strategic with what you give concern to. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that aren't as privileged as I am. There's a nurse out there that's working 20-hour shifts and has 3 kids. Family and doesn't have time to put in on things or passion projects. This person may not even have time to. And unless you have to personally go through something, it may not affect you. Until it happens to you, you don't have, not even that you don't have the care, you just don't have the understanding. You don't have the knowledge of it.
Yeah. I think you and I differ a little bit in the believing in people and their capacity. It's not a criticism. Being a social worker for as long as I have, I think seeing all of this for so long, I am burnt out and I'm fucking tired. And it's helpful to hear you say, well, maybe people just don't understand. And that's hard for me. It's hard for me not to come at those people critically because you see it. How do you not see it? Do you have the news? Do you watch police violence on the news constantly? Do you have a car that you drive by the unhoused? Do you see the microaggressions to your BIPOC peers at work? And then my question is, okay, if they're not going to self-actualize and they're not going to do the work to see the world in the way that it actually is,
how do you get them to? I was wondering, it sounded like you were looking for a less obvious answer to that and start a podcast.
Yeah. And I was a little more existential than that. And that's where I sit. And so this entire podcast is meant to be, let's have the conversations, let's have a safe space for dialogue, because we're not the only ones thinking these things. And my hope for this podcast is to connect with people who do think like this, because I think what's lacking for me is hope. And I feel so disempowered after everything that's happened. For every piece of progress, it feels like we have another piece of regression. And it's so disheartening to see that constantly. We have our first Black president. We have a Me Too movement. We have Black Lives Matter. We have these social identities being splashed across the screen. Look at how these people are being treated. And people cared because we had nothing to do but sit in front of our TV during COVID. And we saw people caring. And then it feels gone, like a slingshot.
Further.
And it's never going to take away the fact that we had our first Black president. It won't change the fact that we have had progress, and maybe that makes progress possible in the future. And I'm open to that hopefulness. Mm-hmm. But right now, it doesn't feel like we're headed in any constructive direction.
Yeah.
It's a little tidbit. I actually live in Denver. I'm in Florida right now doing this with Francis because I needed to be near the people who ground me. So that's Francis. And that's my other 2 friends in the world who live here in Florida. And I think embracing those relationships and allowing those relationships to pull me through this is our, you know, our political climate and all of these things that are happening. I need to stay grounded in the micro elements of my life that feel good and safe. And there's so fewer now. I think it might be relationships pulls us through this.
Yeah, I do too. You mentioned one of the things you want to get out of this. You want to hear from like-minded people. And I have recently.
Oh, I know.
I've recently started trying to hear more from the other non-like-minded people. Because for me, I think a lot about confirmation bias. And it feels like that to me when I'm just surrounding myself by people that have the same ideas. And all I'm doing is confirming the ideas I already have. One.
But those are the right ones.
I know. I know. It's not that I think that I have the wrong thoughts or the wrong ideas. It's I want to know what makes other people think that they have the right thoughts and ideas. For me, it's more of a learning.
Fact-finding mission, if you will.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. I know what we're doing isn't working. I know that we are incredibly polarized. I know. Me from my family and friends, depending on a lot of factors since November. It's just like, what's the goal of those conversations? Is the goal to change their minds? You said the goal is for you to learn, but what's the existential goal? In this dialogue, we are going to be able to communicate better.
I think it goes back to your yes and. See how that turned around on you, did you?
I take that back for the subject.
it could just be some connection with them that I'm missing. I have to try to explain this to myself for it to make sense. And for it to make sense, I need a lot more information. Yeah. And
it's a personal goal.
It's not just a personal goal, but you talked about the people that own the pie. I don't know that we can take on the people that own the pie. We all come together. So my goal, I guess, is A Bug's Life. The movie Pixar, A Bug's Life. That's what it is. Trying to work together, figure out what's going on, and be like, this is how we attack together, guys. This is how we can make change. We're a billion ants. The power we have.
Yes. See, I think where I struggle, because conceptually I understand. Conceptually, communism is fucking wonderful, but
it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Right?
Yeah. So conceptually, I get it. I think that the people who own the pie have put structures into place to perpetuate narratives and falsehoods to have us believe that we could get to where they are, right? That is the American dream.
I think it's either that or, like you said, you're doing just fine with the piece of pie that you have. Don't make things worse. It's also a control thing, I think.
It's all a control thing. The whole structure is a control thing. The pie, the whole thing, it's a mechanism of control. And that's what I'm saying, because those people have convinced more than 50% of our country that their interests are being met.
Yes.
They're not. Unequivocally. Surely. They're not. So again, it's always the how.
Yeah. It is for me too. It is the how. But for me, I need a lot more information to even try to put together a how. I need to know what these people are thinking and how they're feeling. And they think they're going to get out of this. So I want to talk to the other side. Just tell me your thoughts. Tell me how you feel. How'd you get here? What is it?
So let's talk about my social identities and real quick, why it's such a struggle for me to have dialogue with the people who actively voted against my life. I no longer have control over my uterus. I no longer have control over my marriage. I don't want to talk to the people who thought that that was okay. Whether it's my father or some stranger on the street, my fucks to give are not going to go to the people who thought it was okay. To remove my rights and the people I've been fighting for 20 years, their rights, not only their rights, but their safety, the structures that give them a chance at life, those are in danger now. And people don't understand that, or they do and don't give a fuck because it doesn't affect them, because their social identities allow them to be in this pie unaffected.
They are affected by different things. It's voting based on the things that affect them. It's like make change. You have to have a visceral feeling to have that thing has to have affected or someone you love, or you've seen it. You know, you don't have blinders on and you're ignoring the things.
But isn't that what they're doing? My father loves me. It affects me in a very significant way. Didn't change him.
Yeah.
Is it my responsibility to maintain or bring him along or have dialogue and have that conversation? Not about my familial issues, but this is something I think that a lot of us are dealing with post-November. How can you say you love me and vote that way? It's a really difficult thing. And, you know, I'm going to ask you because... Get ready. So a little bit of context for everyone. Frances was a raging Republican when we met.
I don't know why you felt the need to add raging.
Kidding. Not really. She was a little further right than me, or a lot further right than me when we met and when we were forging our friendship. And we had a lot of arguments. She'll say they weren't arguments, but they were definitely arguments. Arguments about, well, I think specifically about kind of like social programs and how they're funded and...
I was a fiscal Republican.
I mean, look at you right now. No, back then, I think I've moved more to the left, but I'm not sure I've made any significant moves on my spectrum. But we had tons of dialogue and tons of conversations where I was like, no, you're misunderstanding. It's not what you think it is. I remember we sat at my patio table and I looked up articles that I had you read right then and there about how much is actually taken out of the average American's paycheck to fund Social Security, which is Medicaid, Medicare, and social programming. And I don't know that you changed your mind that moment, but you read it. And you heard me.
And then I started doing my own research. Yeah.
Right. I know that worked because I know your heart and I love you. So I wanted you to have the facts because I knew your heart wouldn't agree.
If I had only known.
If you only knew. And I'm happy to do that. But you're a very unique human. I meet people every day. I have family that I talk to, not every day anymore. And I tried to have these same conversations for 20 years. 20 years. You think you're the only one that I confronted about these things? No, probably hundreds. of conversation over the course of 20 years, and you are the only person that took it upon themselves to understand the facts and change your mind as a result. I guess that's good enough for me, changing one mind, right?
But that mind may also change others.
The goal, right? And I understand that.
But that's a low success rate. Let's just say that.
And that was before this current climate.
I definitely feel that in this climate, social identities are definitely under threat. We're no longer open to being inclusive and embracing diversity. And like you said, I changed my mind. It's extremely difficult for people to look at themselves. It's not like somebody is, hey, here's the evidence and why you're wrong. And they go, oh, shit, my bad. We immediately put up a defense.
That's true.
I don't think we're having conversations.
We're not.
We're not talking to each other. We're just literally fighting with each other, giving our opinions back and forth and not getting through to people. And it's not that you have to change minds. You just have to get people to go, there might be another way of thinking.
Plant seeds.
Yeah. Or not even that there's another way of thinking. It's
maybe my thoughts are not based in fact.
Our next episode is going to be belief, reasoning, and influence.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a lot about that.
Well, that'll be a good one. But tell me, though, sorry, before we move on, what made it okay? Because you weren't defensive. You were a little bit.
Well, what made it okay for me to think?
What made it okay for us to have that dialogue constructively? Because we did.
I don't know. I'd have to say that it was because you were my friend.
The relationship.
Yes. And I even think about my brother and I. My brother and I have completely different views on some things. But when he talks to me about them, I listen. It's like I have to at least give him the respect of telling me what he thinks and how he feels about things, whether or not I agree with him. We're all different. We all have different perspectives, not good or bad, just different. And it's okay for you to listen to somebody with different opinions. You don't have to agree with them. In the end, you don't have to agree. But I think it does come down to us being human and connecting with people again. And I don't think we're going to get anywhere until we start to do that. So I had to lead by example.
Yeah. So much to say. I agree. Well, it wasn't so much. No, I'm just kidding. I do. I agree. I believe that connections need to happen. I do. I think the hard part would be, how do you do that and ignore the hate?
That's tough.
Yes. And this is not a criticism of you. I love you. You don't walk in the world the same way that I do. And I don't walk the same as my BIPOC friends, and they don't walk the same as somebody else. And I think it's easier to have dialogue and give grace and be constructive and let someone voice their opinion, because at the end of the day, they're not talking about you. Or they might be if they're talking about women in a disparaging way. But otherwise, there's only one category or two categories that they're talking about me. But imagine if your social identities, there's 4, 5, 12 of them that the person you're talking to hates or is actively voted against or has created structures to make your life harder, you're still going to make it that person's responsibility to create positive dialogue with their oppressor. Like if we're talking about how do we make connections with people who, and I'm talking about our current political climate, which is to say that's a very unique and relatively new thing. But if the solution is connections and the people having to have those conversations are the oppressed, it's more work that they have to do on top of living in this world in an incredibly more difficult way than us. Us meaning white people or straight people or whatever. I think I align with those people because I've been serving. I think that this is hard for me, even though I don't have a lot of the social identities that would have me part of an oppressed group outside of the LGBTQIA plus community, shout out. But I don't have to wear that. I don't have to. And in some ways, I do. We call them indicators. Chris has been educated on those. And I align with those people because I've spent 20 years in my career treating or serving the under-resourced communities, which are disproportionately Black and brown people. And so when I'm saying, oh, the solution to this is for us to have dialogue, I'm still watching them suffer because of these policies. I'm trying to do something for them with so few resources that I can't do anything except give them a warm place in my office to sit for a while. I don't even do this work anymore, but I have spent a lot of time doing it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And don't believe that those that are oppressed or a minority should be the ones that have to do the work to bring others along. I think about when you and I became friends and I wasn't familiar with the gay community. I wanted to understand it, but I didn't feel that it was your responsibility to teach me how to understand. I wanted to be a good ally. I should put that on myself. My first step is always to learn and understand.
Yes. And I also want to point out that we're both using individual arguments to explain something far more systemic, which I said is difficult to hear when other people do it as an example or as an excuse. But every fucking sentence that I say starts with how? Because again, you're an exception. You're not the rule. Humans right now have picked their side. They've picked their side. I'm going to make a comparison. I don't know what makes you different, but I can tell you that it's not people's first priority to learn and understand and to seek to understand other people's experiences. Where does it come from?
I don't know. I knew it'd be a little easier. I could be like, hey, this is what we need to do.
Yeah. I mean, can we make a pill for it? This is the giving a shit pill.
The green one.
Those with dominant identity statuses obviously tend to be the ones that control our society. Even if our group is based on our gender and we identify as female, then in the US, female is the subordinate. These statuses set up the way we typically do things, the rule of law that we're supposed to abide by, how we see and understand ourselves, and how we show up and conduct ourselves in social interactions. We have to start by asking ourselves, do my identity statuses allow me to embrace diversity, include others, and learn from those that are different? I don't know why I inherently am able to ask that of myself or how to get other people to do that. That is a much bigger question.
So I'm not going to lie. Like, being friends with you for 20 plus years is a source of hope.
Oh, I got sentimental.
I mean, if humans like you exist, and I'm sure we'll get into families and backgrounds and all the things, but, you know, given your history, it's amazing to me that you are where you are. Your brain, it's just, it's insane to me.
When I die, I'll ask them to
telling you,
dissect it.
Yeah, dude. It's probably just that never-ending need to learn and educate yourself. You've read, how many pages of content have you read to start this podcast? Now ask me. Zero. I wish all humans had the capacity that you do to go through adversity, to come out on the other end of it, to use it for your benefit, and then seek to understand other people's experiences and do what you can to change their mind. That's extraordinary. Not everybody does that.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Let's ask the audience. Call us.
Yeah, you tell us.
What's my email?
Christina@socialthreadspodcast.com.
Christina@socialthreadspodcast.com. If you're one of us, let us know. We're sitting here helpless.
Again, it may just be me with my super hopeful thinking and good wishes, but...
Polyamory. Wow. Got that out.
I don't know that that's the word.
I was going to say you're Pollyanna.
I don't know who Pollyanna is, but sure. But I do think that by respecting and understanding differences, we can bridge our nation and grow as people and ultimately define our collective future. And that's really where we need to get to. And I don't know how we do it, but I think, like you said, this could be a step in the right direction. Even if it doesn't work out or doesn't do what we want it to do, at least we are connecting with some people in some way. At the very least, for me, this is just a mental release.
I was just thinking, if it's just you and me for like an hour every week,
this is my therapy.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a way for me, and I hope maybe some people listening, that we can get through this really tough time are those friendships that pull us through. I really don't want to sound disheartening, but I think we're in for a tough future in the recent years coming our way. So I think leaning into friendships and the ones that you know can pull you through.
Definitely.
Yeah.
To tie that challenge back into social identities, not having the connection with people, we're in for detriment just to ourselves too. You don't even have to be thinking about it as existential as this is our future of our lives in our country. It could just be a detriment to you yourself. There's clinical effects to declining social identity. We as humans are social creatures. We have emotional attachments to the groups that we belong to, strive to maintain positive image, as we said, and we're at our best when we're in the company of others and engaging collaboratively. There's a social psychology study actually that suggests there's evidence to show that lacking social identity, paranoia increases, cortisol increases, we can't provide social support, we become more stressed, that causes health issues, burnout sets in, depression increases, mental health declines. It's just an array of negative shit. So you really do need to figure out for ourselves how to collaborate with other people and other ideas. Because if we keep just singling ourselves or keeping ourselves tied into this little box, we're just going to shrivel up with depression.
It's so depressing.
Just We just need to create inclusive environments so everyone can be authentically engaged and need to change or at least understand our different biases. Again, we'll talk a lot about biases in our next episode. We don't have to agree with everyone or everything. We just have to recognize that people are different and can feel and think differently, and that's okay. For now, we'll call this phase one, y'all. Phase one is to just understand that people are different. Again, you know, it's true that people don't really, it's maybe not even that they don't, it's not that they don't want to, but they can't really care until it affects them or it's something that they can personally connect to. I don't know if it's a lack of empathy, fear, ignorance, or even the free rider effect, you know, like, oh, somebody else has got this. Like, I don't need to get involved.
None of that.
Yeah. Or if it's, you know, lack of belonging to that group or community. So like, I'm not gay, so why would I get involved in gay rights issues? Like, I don't feel like it's my place, sort of thing. Not whatever reason it is. The end result is that we don't act in all of those situations. It could be any of those things, but the result is that we just don't act.
What would acting look like?
Depends. For people that don't understand different social identities.
Yeah. I'm going to start another sentence with how.
Oh, I knew you were. I was going. Like, it's easy for me to say, oh, I have all of my freedom, so I'm going to try to advocate for those that don't. But again, I get where we're going. That's just a...
Well, I think that's exactly what we need. But that is what we need. We need the people with privilege to use it, right? Make space.
I also think it's easier for people that have had to come through some sort of adversity or overcome some... challenge like that. It's people that haven't had to fight to overcome diversity or exclusion. Like you said, it's not as easy for them to recognize it because it's never happened to them. So it seems like maybe it happens one in a million. You know? Right. Like, you don't even know.
Right. There's no action item here. That was a one-off. That's the best of it.
Yeah.
That's the best heart out there. The ones that would do something if they actually believed or thought that it was something actionable, mm-hmm. something they could do. There's something I could do, I would. And I will give grace. I think that is the majority. I do. I don't think it's an excuse anymore. And that's the hard part.
Mm-hmm. I hope a lot of people see that no matter which way you lean, things aren't working. And that's the first step. You got to realize or you have to recognize that there's a problem before you can start working to fix it. I think we're there. You know, honestly, I think both sides can be very frustrated with their team right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
What teams are you talking about?
In this scenario, I'm talking about political teams. And I can't even say I'm a Democrat. I can't say that I'm a Republican anymore. That's for sure.
It's really funny you say that. You're not a Democrat. I would say you're, in some regards, more left than I am.
Oh, I'm definitely left-leaning. So many people automatically equate left-leaning Democrat.
I mean, that is the general understanding of our political spectrum.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm left-leaning progressive. I don't believe that either side is correct. And I believe that both sides are corrupt. So I can't.
Our political system is corrupt.
Oh, yeah.
Just the whole thing. Our interests are no longer being represented. Corporate interests are, but ours aren't.
It's as if the people that we vote to represent us aren't representing our interests. They're now representing big business, large corporation, the top 1%. And I think that's really more where I need to learn and understand more about the other side to figure out where the disconnect in this is between us. I am a little less forgiving when it comes to human rights and social issues. However, I believe that even being able to have concern of social issues is my privilege. I'm not a low-income household. If I were, that would probably be my main concern, not about somebody else's social issue. You know what I mean? I am in a privileged place in life to where I can go, okay, I can spend my time and energy on other people. I don't think everyone's there.
It seems to me like the higher you are on the social order, all the way up to the 1%, the less you care about people in low income household. It's not even in their scope. It's not in their world.
I tie that to like the disconnect that we do in a lot of things. So I was vegan for a stint in my life. And one of the things that I recognized when I was looking into this was how much the person raising and butchering the cow is completely disconnected from the person eating it. And that's because if you were the person that had to do this, you may not do it so much. It's easier if you're going to eat meat 10 times a day to think that it's just a food source.
So it's easier to pass legislation that outlaws abortion when you don't have to see back alleys and people dying from it?
Okay, I wasn't going quite that.
I feel like the concept stands.
But I was thinking like big corporation, like you were saying, the top 1%. Like these CEOs of these companies that are making $10 million a fucking year or whatever, it's easier for them to not have concern for low income because they're so disassociated from it.
Yeah, of course. Which is really funny because those corporations are the ones not paying a livable wage to the people creating low income households. It's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
I want to go back to what you said, though. Having concern about social issues is a privilege because you have the time to do so.
I didn't mean time necessarily.
Right.
But
I have
all the resources I need to survive in life.
That you could worry about others.
Yes.
It's fair. I think it's our responsibility to worry about them, not the other way around. And that's how.
We should have called this show How.
How do we get people to give a fuck?
I think the easier thing might be to just be like, all right, fuck it. Throw our hands up in the air. People are too hateful. People are too ignorant. It's just too hard, whatever it is. Or no one can tell me the how. So no, we can't do that. We
giving up. Don't hear me wrong.
No, we can't. We have to connect with our out-groups, have to try with the new era that we may be entering and the uncertainty that comes with it. We really just need to be prepared for the worst and know what to do. What's the next step? I'm not even looking 4 years in the future. I'm looking two. Okay, let's get to the primaries. What's going to happen? We need to be more educated before we get 2 years in the future, before we can even think about four.
Very place to be.
Fair. So we hope that you allow us both into your lives each week. And we hope that in some way we can bring forth change that we need, or at the very least, just make it a bit easier to deal with it all. All right. Well, that's the show, folks. We would love for you to subscribe and hang out with us every week. Our next episode, we'll be discussing belief, reasoning, and the influence that they have on us. Stay connected.